We present the News Quiz with your host, Miles Jupp.
Welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a cutting from the Wreath and District Gazette, read by Alan Smith.
The picture on the cover of this week's magazine is a scraggy-looking black grouse, which landed on the fence of local resident Brenda White, who shot it.
Our thanks to Ms. State of Richmond in North Yorkshire for sending that in. Now, let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Isabel Hardman. And opposite them on my left, stand-up comedian Deliso Chaponda and Kerry Godleyman. Jeremy, who is in a state of deconstruction?
Carillion, the vast outsourcing firm, which is no more, basically, leaving a lot of its subcontractors bust, and a lot of people wondering if they're going to get paid, and small businesses going out of business, and the government kept giving them contracts despite the fact there'd been profit warnings. And basically, we've been missold PFI. What happens these days in the neoliberal project is that the government just gives the private sector loads of money to hide borrowing, to hide debt, and hide the fact that it's actually spending any money. But the money has to be paid back to the private company over time. And it isn't about hostility to the private sector per se. I mean, some things should be run like businesses. Businesses, maybe, should be, but not prisons and hospitals and schools. And if you're a school, right, you think, all right, not everything can be done by the public sector. So, you know, there might be some tiling that the school caretaker can't manage. So you get sort of like Dudley Ceramics to come in and do your tiling. But you don't outsource school dinners to a private security firm. Because a dinner lady should be a sort of maternal, sturdy woman with large arms and an eye for an underfed kid who needs an extra dollop of mash. Not somebody considered too violent to work in an asylum removal centre. Theresa May said, well, a third of this was done under Labour. And then Corbyn should have said, yeah, that's kind of why I'm the leader now. But he resisted. He resisted saying that. Because it was. Because Major did a bit. Major didn't do much of anything, really. He was only Prime Minister for a bit because the country said, is anybody in the country not Margaret Thatcher? And he said, I'm not. They said, all right, you've got 4 years. So he had 4 years. And he didn't do. And then new Labour came in and they just were so intoxicated with the private sector. They were like, oh, my God, I met like this hedge fund manager and he was like so amazing. He had like cufflinks, I'm not even joking. He had like a pink shirt, not like red sock in whitewash pink, I mean actual proper pink. And he said like, I'll take over and run the country. It was so amazing, it was so inspirational. And so Labour just started this weird, just handing everything, bringing them into every aspect of our lives. And now we're left with this absolute wreckage. But if you say that, then you're hostile to private enterprise.
It does sound like you're being deeply unpatriotic.
Yes. one of the hedge funds that bet against them, which is a weird thing where these hedge funds make money out of betting on companies, gave the Tories £50,000 for their election fund. Yes.
It's probably all above board, though, isn't it?
I
mean,
I'd never heard of Carillion before last week. Is that bad to confess?
It's a made-up company.
I thought it was Marillion. I was like, well, no wonder they gone bust. They haven't had a hit for years.
How do you feel about all this, Deliso?
Well, I heard that it is a very complicated situation, but to me it seems very simple. Because essentially we have a construction firm who promised certain services, kept taking money despite not carrying out the work. That seems to me the same experience of every person in England who's ever hired a builder to do an extension. And I think the solution is simple. They just need to hire a Polish guy from down the block to sort it out in a week. It'll be great.
I think you're being too hard on yourself, Jeremy, by saying you seem hostile in your case against Carillion. I'm not sure Theresa May fared much better in persuading us of the merits of private sector outsourcing at PMQs this week. I mean, PMQs is terrible at the moment. It's incredibly dull. Every crisis, both Theresa May and Jeremy Corbyn managed to turn into the most boring episode ever. Like, Jeremy Corbyn managed to make the NHS crisis boring the other week, and he succeeded again with Carillion. But Theresa May doesn't seem to believe in her government's own policies. So, I mean, one of her answers was, I'm not going to answer the question because you didn't ask one. But most of her answers about what the value of the private sector was were, well, it's good to have them. And that was about it. So I think you could have done private. A much better
He job said term. There's one rule for the rich and one rule for the poor. And then all the Tories applauded that. I think they got... They misunderstood.
He was just pandering.
I mean, it's embarrassing for the government. It's embarrassing for Chris Grayling, who is still the Transport Secretary and seems to have the sort of opposite of the Midas touch.
Chris Grayling's amazing. No, Chris
he is
Grayling,
a survivor,
no
one, isn't he?
No one's ever made me feel like this before. He actually makes me miss Stephen Byers. Is that fair?
When I was young, about half the economy was in the public sector, and you thought, that's probably about right. All the essential stuff was in the public sector. People like Richard Branson in those days were sort of quite colourful. You thought, yeah, he's good, because he's got a record label, and he's got record shops, and that's great. And you think, because you wouldn't want a Labour council to be running the record shops, because all the records would be by Pete Seeger, you know. So you think... So that was about right. And then now he's... Richard Branson, the lovable music business guy, is now suing the NHS for not giving him enough stuff of it to do. Then people talk about extremism and that, but it's really that... It's the extremism of the market, dare I say.
Because he said it's either a racket or there's a lot of denial going on, isn't it? I mean, like... They must have known it was going down the pan. Sure. Well, I mean, it's like saying signs, to Harold Lloyd, why are you hanging off a clock? And he's like, what clock? I mean, that is a lot of denial, isn't it? I mean...
Institute is Philip Green. He's called Philip Green as well, isn't he?
But he's not.
No, he's another one. They've basically just everybody in that, everybody who's
that
disreputable
name.
In private...
Slowly turns into Philip Green.
Yeah. It's just going to be one name, which would make it much easier. What are we against? Philip Green.
Do you know what the Institute of Directors called the bonuses that the executives of Carillion originally got? What?
Splendid.
They called them highly inappropriate.
But nonetheless enviable.
Yeah. This is the collapse of the PFI construction giant Carillion. The government failed to notice all the apparent signs that the company was headed for a collapse, including several profit warnings, spiralling debts, a hooded skeletal figure with a scythe standing in the corner of all of their board meetings, or the fact that their CEO's last visit to Downing Street was heralded by hundreds of black cats drowning themselves in the Thames, which then turned to blood. Still, you can read too much into things, can't you? Carillion ran 50 British prisons where inmates were shocked to be summoned by the governor on Monday morning and told that while some of them could apply for positions in other penal institutions, they were sadly going to have to let the rest of them go. As well as prisons, Carillion also builds schools, which are essentially the same thing. At the end of the day, the walls have to stand up to the demands of a dirty protest, whether it happens in Ewing or double geography. 2 points to Jeremy. Deliso, who is in town to put the border in order?
Oh, you must be talking about Theresa May and Emmanuel Macron having a meet to talk about migrants and defence. Their talks are wide-ranging. So Britain is going to give France $45 million to help secure the border in Calais, which is not payable in cigarettes and wine. And they're going to have military helicopters to aid French in Sahel. But what I find most interesting is that the French are going to loan the Bayeux Tapestry back to England, and it depicts the Normans defeating the English. This is clearly a threat. The subtext is, we kicked your ass in the past, and we can kick it again if need be, right before you have some negotiations. But at the same time, I think it will be great to have foreign artwork in a British museum that was given willingly, as opposed to...
Kerry, are you delighted that
Macron
has
come
in?
Oh, I've seen the Bayeux Tapestry. It's not all that. It's a bit of a sort of fake news tea towel of sorts, isn't it? Firstly, it's not a tapestry. It's an embroidery. Lie. Oh. Secondly, Harold didn't get the arrow in the eye, apparently. That's not true. And they say, oh, it gives insight into the way people ate and lived. They're eating chicken and soup. We still eat chicken and soup. It's not providing...
Also, I heard from one of the people who was in the battle that the embroiderer, it adds 10 pounds.
And there's 6 metres of it missing. There's a copy of it in the Reading Museum. Swap it. They'll never know.
How long did the battle last? They must have sewed like buggery, mustn't they? keep up. It's annoying though because it's not actually a tapestry. It's actually an eiderdown. It's one of those annoying things that isn't actually actually a tomato is not a vegetable. It's actually a fruit. Do you know, a walnut is not actually no nuts are actually nuts. The only real nuts are pineapples and straw. And Richard III, he had a perfectly straight spine and never murdered the princes in the tower. In fact, he let them sit up late and watch Frozen on DVD. Nothing is true anymore. What happened to the days when we just blindly accepted things?
No, but if we were to do the Bell of Hastings happen today, instead of the tapestry, it would be reported on Twitter. That's it would be true. Like, you know, Harold shot by an arrow, hashtag Belen.
Hashtag winky face.
Do you think it is really a part of the negotiations, or it's just a coincidence?
I suppose it is part of the negotiations. It's a way of saying, we're your friends still from France. But I was really amused today when I was listening to commentators talking about the talks that Theresa May and Emmanuel Macron were having and saying they're going to be having a lunch and talks over lunch, which are likely to be highly awkward. I'm sort of thinking, when has Theresa May had talks that aren't highly awkward? What does non-awkward Theresa May look like? Because we haven't seen her yet.
The money is entirely for fencing CCTV and infrared detection technology. Are we using that money? Have we got to develop that technology? How does all that come to £44.5 million?
We've given them tens of millions. Well, not us. I mean, Cameron did. The fact is that the pull factor to Britain is the English language, Manchester United, and our clearly undeserved reputation for being nice, welcoming people. That's why people come here and then are surprised to be interrogated by Home Office Jobsworth, who says, well, why didn't you just confess to stop the beatings? And how murdered by the Taliban were your parents? That's what they face when they come here.
There was also a case where people who were fleeing their countries because they'd been persecuted because they were gay were being forced to prove that they were gay before they were actually granted asylum here.
Made to sing the whole of Oklahoma from beginning to end. It's disgusting. It's disgusting. And you think,
it's a good show, Jeremy.
And people say, well, why? Yes, it is a good show.
This is the new Anglo-French agreement over the border in Calais, which will involve us handing over £44.5 million in order to preserve the unique bond between our two great nations. The summit between Theresa May and Emmanuel Macron was held at Sandhurst Military Academy, which seems a bit of a veiled threat to the French. presumably HMS Victory was double-booked. Macron said the UK will need to make a greater funding contribution if France is to go on being our coast guard, seemingly not understanding that in this country, coast guards are funded by putting pennies in a plastic lifeboat on a post office counter. Still, increasing our border security is, I think we can all agree, a small price to pay for ensuring no one sneaks over here and mops our hospital floors without being in possession of an authenticated Saxon bloodline. In other Anglo-French news, the Bayeux Tapestry may be coming to England in the year 2020. The tapestry shows how much military strategy has changed over the years. For example, the fact that for the most part, people no longer fight in single file.
Do you know, the only reason we lost the Battle of Hastings was because Harold was knackered, having had to rush up to the northeast to fight Harold Hardrada, where he beat the Vikings at Stamford Bridge 2-0 in injury time. Had the battles been the other way round, he'd have beaten the Normans, then had to leg it all up the A1 and then been beaten by the Vikings, and instead of eating blancmange now, we'd all be eating herring.
You have had such an incredible life.
I know. Young people ask me, they say, are you lost?
Our gain will be other people's loss, especially if those other people work for the website Things to Do in Bayeux. Two points to Deliso. Isabel, which committee has gained momentum?
Well, this is Labour's ruling National Executive Committee, which had an election this week, and three members of the Corbynite group Momentum were elected. Now, this is obviously, it's not surprising, given Jeremy Corbyn has basically won the argument in the Labour Party and sent the moderates off with tiny violins to go and weep on their own. So actually having a Corbynite takeover of the ruling body makes the same amount of sense as Tony Blair trying to refashion the Labour Party in his own image.
When momentum wins things, it's like it's sinister. Like it, when if Corbyn becomes Prime Minister, people will say he has seized the levers of government in a power grab. You think he was elected.
I do agree with you. The language is a bit over the top sometimes, like a sinister power grab. And I also read that you know, Corbyn now has a firm grip on the Labour Party. And as an African, I've got to say, you have no idea what a firm power grab is. Where are the military parades? Where are the assassination attempts? At most, this is a slightly firm clench.
I like the new Jeremy. He doesn't wear the Lenin hat anymore. He doesn't
wear
the crappy
Hardy
suit.
Or Corbyn? We always have to clarify which particular left-wing figure you're talking about.
Most of the attacks on momentum seem to be there. Trotskyist, Stalinist, and I think you've put together two things that are somewhat different there. I mean, they might not be a huge difference, but at least the width of a nice pick apart, the difference.
What about reselection? The idea of mandatory re-selection. What does it mean?
Well, this NEC election and the disputes panel putting Christine Shawcroft onto that has suggested that there might be a move towards mandatory re-selection, which is when sitting MPs have to basically reapply in order to stand for Labour in the same seat in the next election. And Jeremy Corbyn has never ruled this out. He talked about the need for all politicians to be accountable. And I guess it would sort of, you know, speed up the processes for those dissident Blairites, a bit like the way that the guillotine sped up executions from previous methods in the French Revolution. I guess it also depends actually whether Labour wants to win or not, because if they do want to win an election rather than just changing the Labour Party into a Stalinist, Lenin-hatted party or whatever Jeremy wants it to look like, actually they can't have these reselection battles because it'll just be lots of people shouting at each other and Blairites crying as well, which is very off-putting for the public.
They probably won't have them, but the thing is, everyone's made to reapply for their job now all the time. I was made to do a pilot before getting a radio series on Radio 4. Thanks a lot after 35 bloody years.
These are the results of Labour's internal elections, where three wins for Momentum-backed candidates gave the left-wing a majority on the party's National Executive Committee. If you're not familiar with Labour's National Executive Committee, just imagine the Soviet Politburo, but where everyone's called either Keith or Carol. There are some in the Labour Party who see momentum as a millstone that will drag them to defeat, but a millstone drags you down, whereas momentum are dragging the party to the left. So, really, they're more like a headstrong conjoined twin who keeps thinking they heard something in the forest.
The left wing says that on the website.
The left wing have denied that they're engaged in a purge of the moderates, saying that former members of the committee can look forward to an exciting and challenging new career being lowered into the foundations of a half-finished flyover. And thanks to Carillion, we'll be seeing many of those over the coming months. 2 points to Isabel. Kerry, whose old blog has hindered his new job?
This is the story that Ben Bradley, the Conservative MP for Mansfield and newly appointed Vice Chairman for Youth, has managed to keep his job this week despite some blog posts that he made hitting the headlines. On his blog, he ranted about forcing vasectomies onto benefit claimants, or wasters, as he described them. He said families that have never worked a day in their lives, having four kids, won't be long before we're drowning in a vast sea of unemployed wasters and then we have to pay their keep. If he does want to stop procreation, he's doing a great job of making sure that no one wants to have sex with him. But he has apologised for his language, and Downing Street are happy and satisfied with his apology, and he has kept his job.
My favourite justification that I heard for not sacking him was that actually a lot of his comments weren't that far away from actual Tory policy, and so getting rid of him might make things a bit awkward. And he did actually, he gave an interview to one of my Spectator colleagues last week where he talked about the fact that every politician would have something lurking in their online closet that might come back to haunt them and that they shouldn't have to apologise. I'm not sure he was quite expecting that thing in his online closet to come and hit him quite so hard, quite so fast. But I guess this is the first big sort of fallout from that pointless reshuffle, which so much energy was expended in. And there's a sort of slower burning fallout as well. I was talking to some Tory MPs this week who hadn't been promoted, which is why they wanted to meet up with me, because they were sad and they thought I could listen to their problems like a counsellor, journalist style person. And they were saying they'd had meetings with the whips where the whips had said to them that, we know you didn't get promoted, so you're welcome to come in and sort of talk about what went wrong. Now, I committed the faux pas of then asking another Conservative MP who hadn't been promoted, oh, have you been in for your meeting with the whips yet? Because obviously they would have expected you to get promoted, so they would have called you in. He could, no, I haven't been invited in for that either. So there are some really, really bitter MPs who not only haven't been promoted, but not even the whips want to talk to them about why they haven't been promoted.
What's that thing, is it, where he was 22 and he made these comments and you think, well, is that, you know, 22? I think it's worrying, not so much worrying that someone's saying something stupid when they're 22, it's the fact that they're making stupid remarks, particularly on the subject of law enforcement and social policy. You think, what sort of trend? I mean, when I was 22, I was, like, bricking up shops, I was setting fire to national monuments, I was doing kids' TV. I mean, it was a completely... That was totally different life.
Always worried about William Hague, you know, because, I mean, he's quite an engaging character since he's sort of left politics for a more interesting career. But he, when he was 16 at the year of punk rock, you think, in 1977, you think, oh, no, the Tory party conference, standing there looking like a vengeful old tobacconist. Going...
Did you read Ben Bradley's apology?
No.
Because he says that, oh, his views have changed and softened ever since he became married. It's made him more reasonable. But my experience with marriage is it makes you more unreasonable. This defence does not make sense.
Well, it makes sense in the sense he probably doesn't have time to think these sorts of things because now he's married with children, that's what he says, he's mellow. And he spends most of his time worrying about money and having incredibly long arguments about whether or not you put plastic in the dishwasher.
He's back in his life.
Once he becomes divorced, he'll have more empathy for the homeless.
This is MP and Conservative Vice Chair for Youth Ben Bradley, who apologised this week for blog posts he'd made encouraging police brutality and vasectomies for the unemployed. Once again, a promising young MP has been caught in that sticky trap of having said something and other people noticing. Bradley claimed his views changed after he became a father, which is odd because if anyone reminds you of a bunch of feckless wasters, it's children. Theresa May has given Ben Bradley her backing, which should send a cold chill down his spine. Still, if he does lose his job, he's got that vasectomy to look forward to. Stanley knife, bit of wood to bite. The blog posts about vasectomies were made all the way back in 2012, when, let's be honest, we all did things we're not proud of. Some of us while watching the beach volleyball. Two points to Kerry. And at the end of round one, what are the scores? Oh, tell you what, it's close, guys. Oh, goodness me. I can see how nervous you are, Jeremy. Right, here we go.
I'm on the edge of the will to live.
I knew we'd get you up.
Right. Not much does now.
And at the end of round one, the scores are Jeremy and Isabel have 4, but Deliso and Kerry have 5.
Yes. I also hope I can use these points towards my application for British citizenship. Point-based system now.
They are transferable. We start round two with a cutting from the sports section of the Daily Telegraph, quoting the former England cricketer Mike Gatting.
I remember Elton John put on a party for us during the 1986-87 Ashes tour. We saw CDs for the first time because he'd brought his own collection with him. I don't think he actually played one of his own songs all night. It was fantastic.
Thanks to Dennis Fuller in Camberley for sending us that. Jeremy, which old enemies are getting right in the zone?
North and South Korea, is it?
Yeah.
OK, I didn't follow this very closely. It's a bit weird. In the Winter Olympics, which are soon, they're going to march under the same thing, flag, the Korean flag, which is handy. And then they're going to have one team which is all of Korea, which is, I don't know, oh, what are they doing
ice
in the winter?
Hockey.
Ice hockey, yeah, good. OK, we'll get there, we'll piece it all together. And they've got a huge number of cheerleaders who are incredibly focused because they know if they drop a pom-pom, they will be killed with a bazooka. So it seems to have been cast as Korea's plot to finally take the South.
Maybe they're special forces people, guys
disguised as cheerleaders. Yeah.
Start one of their routines and suddenly whip out, I don't know, what special forces people
they're, those are like Bond villain pom-poms.
Deadly pom-poms.
Yeah.
Dirty pom-poms.
Deadly.
Not just got very excited. No, but people do use dirty to just. They talk about dirty bombs now. I prefer adult bombs.
I think they should go all the way with this Winter Olympics and just make it entirely conflict-based. So we can have, like, an Israel-Palestine bobsled team, and we can have Eritrea and Somalia doing the luge or something like that. That would be great.
I think, yeah, do you think they get a lot of practice doing the bobsleigh in Israel and Palestine?
There's a lot of sand, so it's a little bit of a different thing, but it's a dune.
I suppose so, just sort of,
is it the first time anything like this has happened? Is this like
the Winter Olympics?
Well, no. No, but North and South Korea coming together on a thing of this...
Probably before Korea was divided, they had one team, didn't they?
But it's all part of negotiating. They've been having negotiations together. Does anyone know where they've had these delightful negotiations?
Alton Towers.
Yeah, very close, in the demilitarised zone.
Isn't this just the Trump effect, that they feel they have to bandy together just in case he nukes the wrong shithole country by mistake?
So how likely is that, do you think, to happen? Do you think if South Korea say, do you know what, these guys actually, they're all right. I mean, you know, I don't like what they stand for, but, you know, that their ice hockey is absolutely first class.
And they're the kind of the same country. I mean, if aerial photography is to be believed. It's, you know, it's all one peninsula, isn't it? And they've got the same language and...
They're both called Korea, that's a big...
They're both called Korea, yeah.
It's a really good starting point,
yeah,
isn't it?
They're good, yeah. The trouble with North Korea is that it's always led by such comical people that you can't quite take seriously how horrific it is. Because you watch documentaries about it, and then you think, oh, my God, you'd have to be so evil to run that country. And then you just sort of see this buffoon-like guy who looks like he's been doing a summer season in Blackpool playing Mr. Mad Dictator from the Far East. But, I mean, Hitler tried to pull it off by being sort of so Charlie Chaplin-esque that nobody would take him seriously and he would by stealth take over the world.
But where do you think it went wrong for him?
Basically, our steely nerve and determination, plus the Russian winter, helped.
These are the ongoing talks between North and South Korea, which have set this room alight. That was an ad lib. These are the ongoing talks between...
Some of us aren't blessed with words given to us, Miles.
And you are doing a tremendous job, Jeremy. Really. And we wish you good luck in the future with whatever you decide to do. These are the ongoing talks between North and South Korea after both sides announced they will march under a unified flag in the forthcoming Winter Olympics. Talks between the two countries are taking place in the peace village of Panmunjom, deep in the demilitarized zone. Landmarks in the village include the Bridge of No Return, always a popular spot for honeymooners. That's very close to the roundabout of doom off the slip road of eternal torment. This is what happens when you don't let town planners have time off for stress. Visitors to the village are greeted by a sign saying, please drive carefully through this village at a convenient height to be read by intercontinental ballistic missiles. The Olympic mission represents a clash of competing priorities, the North's desire to maintain isolation versus Kim Jong-un's lifelong ambition to be interviewed by Claire Balding. 5 points to Jeremy. Isabel, who's not been a model girlfriend?
This is the heartbreaking story of current UKIP leader Henry Bolton and his former girlfriend, Jo Marnie, who has been making all sorts of deeply unpleasant comments about Meghan Markle and about refugees. So UKIP members gave Henry Bolton an ultimatum that it was either the love of his life or the party. And so he chose the party. And he announced that they were going to end the romantic side of their relationship, but they were discovered later this week on the tube together and then kissing at a club. I think, given UKIP's been campaigning so hard for leave to mean leave, I think they're a little bit confused about what leaving actually means.
I read her text and she says, they're working their way up. Next, we're going to have a Muslim PM and a black king. And I must say, as a minority, she's oddly inspirational. Why do racists seem to believe in our capabilities more than we do? I think they need to make her a motivational speaker in Brixton.
They can't flourish without Farage. They can't. It's like trying to grow tomatoes without manure.
I think they're going to have a personnel problem here, though, because At some point, presumably, she's going to need to be UKIP leader as well. Otherwise, they're going to have to move on to the people in this room.
I know.
I mean, they are running out
they
of people.
They do change leaders more than I hoover down the back of the sofa.
But then Farage is always the leader again, isn't it? I mean, he's been like leader about four times. And every time there's a new leader, you think, oh, you won't be around for long, because it'd be Paul Nuttall saying, I'm going to be leader for a very, very long time because I'm the man who beat Jesse Owens in the 100 metres at the Berlin Olympics in 1936. And then he's gone, and then there's a woman who was leader for about 4 minutes, and then Farage just comes back and be's leader again. I mean, at least Doctor Who changes heads. Farage regenerates, and he's still bloody Farage. He just keeps on being Farage all the time.
Well, at least with Paul Nuttall, it would have just been an imaginary racist girlfriend as opposed to an actual.
This is the scandal engulfing UK Independence Party leader Henry Bolton after it was revealed that his now ex-partner, Jo Marnie, had sent a string of racist text messages. Bolton is under pressure to resign but has distanced himself from Jo Marnie's remarks, although he does admit some responsibility, as he stated on his online dating profile, would like to meet racist glamour model. All this controversy has been a distraction for UKIP members who have been unable to concentrate on their core activities of sitting on Kent clifftop, staring at the horizon and gripping a musket. 2 points to Isabel. Deliso, have a listen to this.
It's payday. We gotta get that cheese. We gotta get that cheese.
Okay, I know what you're referring to, but where did you get this song? Who makes a catchy tune about cheese?
It is catchy, isn't it? it's Get That Cheese by Too Short. We all know that. That's why we were humming along.
Is cheese a euphemism in that song, or is it actually about cheese?
A euphemism for what?
No, cheese is money.
Is it money?
Money.
Oh,
get that cheddar. Cheese.
Oh, okay. You make that up?
No.
Amazingly, this is leading somewhere.
Yes.
Deliso, who's cheesed off about a trade deal?
There's been a dispute between Mexico and Spain because Spain says that Manchego cheese, which they are producing in Mexico, is not the real Manchego cheese. They are the only ones who make the real Manchego cheese, and their Manchego cheese is just imitating. It's very aggressive, and I didn't know people care so much about cheese. This would hopefully never happen in England. We're not going to have Finland calling and saying, those Dairyli slices, they're not real. We make real ones over here.
It's also, though, do you know what's different about the cheeses?
They're not at all alike, but they look alike.
Proper one's sheep, but I go with the Mexicans because they don't do the silly lisping thing. If you go to Mexico, you don't have to do the silly lisping. It's such a relief. You don't have to say dos cerveza. And all the lisping thing is because they had a king who had a lisp. I mean, what you can't just go with the king's speech impediment. I mean, what if, the king had Tourette's? You say, hola, ¿cómo está? ¡Aus! Dos cerveza. ¡Aus! Tesco!
They called it... pirate cheese. It sounds like a sort of nautical STD that you get after shore leave.
The Spanish, though, are saying, though, it's Manchego cheese because it's from Mancha. If you make something somewhere else, like if you make a Cornish pasty in London, is it a London pasty or is it still a Cornish pasty?
No, it's just a pasty.
It's just a pasty.
It's the EU who've enforced that, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah, French toast.
So same. If it's not, it's a pirate French toast.
Pirate toast, yeah.
Pirate toast.
So that's how you make French toast, you put pirate cheese on it. And, almost nothing is real, Kerry.
What?
I was in Leicester once and I bought some red Leicester and it was made in the Republic of Ireland.
Did you absolutely lose it?
I did. It's like Worcester sauce. The best Worcester sauce is made in Evesham.
What about the Dole Mayo and it says made in Holland? I mean, this is chaos.
It is.
Yeah. I know. We should all be completely insular, shouldn't we? We should just have your own...
We have enough trouble with different nations of immigrants. Now we're worrying where the food is from.
Deliso, have you got British citizenship or not?
No, not yet, which is why I've done no royal jokes.
Oh, because you're going to have to do... You're going to have to do this weird test where you have to know all this stuff.
Oh, I've done the test already, and it's just, it's history. I didn't know that's what's necessary.
What sort of things do you get asked?
Oh, it's all about, like, you know, Battle of Hastings, Henry VIII's wives. Well, to me, it seems like a GCS.
Ooh, I know them. Anne of Green Gables. Flopsy, Mopsy, Pestilence, Envy.
La La.
Sleepy La. Tinky Winky.
This is a tale of two cheeses with the same name that are holding up a trade deal between the EU and Mexico. Spain want exclusive rights to the name Manchego and to prevent Mexico from marketing their own Manchego cheese. What this shows us in advance of our own negotiations is that the strength of the EU is that it knows how to drive a hard bargain, and its weakness is that it's obsessed to an unhealthy degree with cheese. By threatening the trade deal with the dispute surrounding Manchego, it's been suggested that the Spanish have cut off their nose to spite their face, which is quite the faux pas amongst cheese lovers. We could be in for similar problems when we strike our trade deal with the EU, should it be unexpectedly discovered that we make any foods with distinctive flavours whatsoever. The Spanish have accused the Mexicans of cheese piracy, and there is nothing more terrifying than a cheese pirate, leaping from the mast of their aquatic dairy farm, shouting yo-ho-ho and just a smidgen of quince. 2 points to Delito. Kerry, have a listen to this.
The blowfish story.
I was really moved then.
I know.
Kerry, you're moved, I'm moved, we're all moved. But...
How can we know when you're moved? Your face doesn't change.
Well, yes, it does sometimes look very serious. Sometimes I'm sort of crying with laughter. That's too... You must be able to tell the difference between my two emotional states, Kerry. Kerry, what meal is to die for?
This is the story about a supermarket in Japan that has had to broadcast emergency warnings this week to stop people from eating fugu, which is blowfish, right? So they sold 5 packets of this blowfish, but they'd left the livers in, which contains poison, right? I thought I'd poison my liver over Christmas, but not this bad. So all the internal organs of this fish are poisonous, and only very specialist chefs can do the preparation. It's so poisonous, it's like 200% more poisonous than cyanide.
I'm like that with bread.
They say that there's no antidote to this poison, right? So the symptoms are that you get a numbness and tingling around the mouth, salivation, nausea, vomiting, and then death. Right, so the other symptoms... You don't really need to know about the other symptoms. And local authorities, I love this bit, local authorities had to warn people not to eat any of this fugu by using the Gamagori emergency wireless system, which is a broadcast. It's all these loudspeakers around the whole town just going around going, don't eat the blowfish! The blowfish will kill you! Some moron left the livers in the blowfish! I don't get the appeal. I like food. I like, you know... I like ice cream, but if I thought it would kill me, I'd definitely switch to froyo.
The word delicacy is always worrying, isn't it? Because delicacy always means it either involves fantastic cruelty to very small songbirds...
Or
the most revolting part of an animal. In this case, the part that will kill you, which is most of it.
Most of it? Yeah.
Most of it
will kill
you. So you've got these special chefs who salvage a tiny little bit, the one bit... that doesn't kill you, and then you eat it, and then your reaction is, oh, thank God I'm still alive, which should be a kind of food given, really. I mean, what is the... Just eat other fish. It's like picking the sweet corn out of turds. Just buy other sweet corn. It does make wheat-intolerant people look a bit soppy, though, doesn't it?
Oh, I get so bloated.
Just, all right, try death.
It's exciting, though, because there were 5 of these fish accidentally sold, but they've only found 3 of them.
Yeah, it's like Willy Wonka in the chocolate factory. Yeah. I've got a golden liver.
2 of them at large. One of them's called Nemo. It's terrible.
I love that they're described as being at large, though, as if the fish themselves are sort of going undercover or whatever like that. They're sort of sleeping on the sofa, some other poisonous fish. You know. This is the situation in Gamagori, where a supermarket mistakenly sold 5 fugu blowfish without removing their poisonous livers. Warnings were broadcast over the city's emergency wireless system, finally proving to the authorities that the fish klaxon wasn't a complete waste of money. People say that fugu tastes like chicken, although if you want that chicken taste without the potential lethal consequences, may I recommend chicken? The fish is reportedly more poisonous than cyanide, although in fairness to cyanide, it will usually do the job for you and won't leave that incriminating smell of fish. In 1958, 176 people died from fugu poisoning. What they don't mention is that it was an otherwise delightful wedding. And most importantly, the rain stayed away. But 2 points to Kerry. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting they'd like to share? Jeremy?
Miles, this was sent in by Liz Dive, and it was seen at the Women's Institute Centre in Huntingdon in Cambridgeshire in the Ladies' Loos. Please switch off lights in the toilets after your event.
Isabel?
Well, Liam O'Donnell saw this on Gumtree. Hello, I'm selling this 2007 Polo. I got it in a part exchange for my wife.
Deliso.
Peter McMurty in Carrickfergus saw this in a paper. It said, Dutch police shoot man with knife.
Kerry.
Mike Manson in Bristol says that he's indebted to IKEA for this instruction that came with some blinds that he'd purchased. The blind lowers the general light level and provides privacy by preventing people outside from seeing directly into the room.
Thank you. And now let's take a look at the final score. Deliso and Kerry have 9, but this week's winners are Jeremy and Isabel with 11. Oh. Before we leave you, here is a sign spotted by Charlie Kind of Oxford at the London Boat Show.
This toilet is a display model. Please ask a member of staff if you'd like to watch a demonstration.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Jeremy Hardy, Isabel Hardman, Delisa Chaponda and Kerry Godleman. In the chair was Miles Jupp and the news was read by me, Alan Smith. The chair's script was written by Nick Doody, James Kettle and Jenny LaVille, with additional material by Scott Bennett and Mike Shepherd. The producer was Richard Morris and it was a BBC Studios production.